Welcome to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast with Caroline Blair and Chris Patterson. This week we're back inside the Scotland Team Hotel and we're joined by Andy Christie. Great to have you, Andy.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, I mean, we try not to look back too much, but when it was the Calcutta Cup and it's kicking around Scottish Grass Murrayfield for another year, it's quite hard not to, especially after a performance like yours.
I don't know how much my performance massively contributed to it, but it was an incredible day, one of the best.
Was that your first experience?
My first against England. First against England.
Oh, that's a good one.
It was special. It was incredible. Especially seeing Doc running around with the trophy.
Has he put it down yet?
Is he still running?
he picks it up from here and there. I thought you're going to have to surgically remove it from his grasp at some point. He did not want to let go of it, but it was great to see.
How did that day feel for you now that you've had chance to reflect on it and even just mentioning Doc there?
Oh, it was very, very special. It's one of those I think everyone kind of dreams of being a part of. And yeah, obviously to be on the right side of the result is amazing. Seeing my mum afterwards, I walked out the change rooms holding the trophy and kind of tapped my mum on the shoulder. So that was quite special.
Your family as well have a brilliant supporter history with you. Yeah. Talk about your biggest fans. Yeah. There was a viral video before your first inclusion.
First squad inclusion, yeah.
And that video was... It was so lovely to see.
Is that when you filmed?
I recorded them on FaceTime. Yeah. They are unbelievable in terms of support. Like, I've had my grandparents fly up to Murrayfield a couple of times now. The whole family actually is been able to come to a game or two. So it's been a special campaign for that as well.
You can't really do this game to the highest level without the support of the family. And it's great to see that connection after the game. What, in terms of your own rugby journey, what has that looked like for you? And you played obviously Scotland under 16s, then onto England for the latter age groups.
Yeah.
Looking at that commitment and how you've managed to get to different things, I understand that your granddad was involved as
well.
Yeah,
he was huge. So like, my dad spends quite a lot of time in Nigeria, so kind of raising us, me and my brothers was a very hands-on, you know, with my mum's family, with my dad and my mum. So my granddad used to drive me up to Sheffield for Scottish Exiles, would fly me to Scotland for under 16s camps and would kind of stay in a hotel for the weekend and then fly back with me and all that kind of stuff. He was incredible, so would not be able to be here without them at all.
How was it going back to the game? We were talking and we were going to have a discussion about being on the bench and how difficult it is because you don't know when your start point is.
Yeah.
How is your emotion? Because you're there obviously as a player and you're totally engaged in it, but there's a support element as well because you're watching it from the bench. How was the nerves during and when the call came to come on?
Yeah, well, I tried to not kind of celebrate, like be too high or too low. Yeah. So obviously, you know, things like watching Dewey score 60 metre tries, everyone wants to run around screaming, but I'm trying to like preserve a bit of energy because I'm going to come on at some point. So I try and remain quite balanced. I think the most challenging thing about coming off the bench is you come on the pitch with so much energy.
Yeah.
And you can blow through it within 2 minutes
because
you just try and sprint everywhere and do everything and then still got 25 minutes left to play and you're gassed. So I'm trying to get better at managing my energy and being able to do other things other than just sprint around the place. But it was good. It was fine. And the amount of adrenaline you've got in your body, you kind of don't think about how tired you are sometimes, especially in a game like that.
You also don't know when you're coming on, but where you're coming on. You'll cover all three positions of back row.
Yeah.
So the role's different, the line-out roles are different. You know, so it's almost what you have to be careful not to mentally exhaust yourself watching the game, putting yourself in what if every contact situation. Is
that's a really good point. How are you balancing that? Like, if you are looking across the back row and you're trying to watch everybody, aren't you?
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, you like to think you'll have the knowledge so waxed that by the time you get to the game, they're all a second nature. It's not always that easy. But again, on the weekend, I was helped a little bit because Jamie said he'd cover the seven role. Mm-hmm. So if I had to come on to seven, then I'd just run the six role and he'd do that and he'd move around. So I only had to learn six and eight, which makes it a lot easier because learning three roles is really difficult.
Have you had chance to catch up with your Saracens teammates?
Yeah, I have. I spoke to them for the most part in the president's suite afterwards and kind of had a quick catch up there. But I think with all that stuff, I'll spend some time with them after the tournament properly. But yeah, a lot of them are like my best mates. So it was a weird week, kind of avoiding conversation with them, avoiding talking to them. And after the game, it was a bit of relief that we can kind of go back to like normal friendship. And it was nice to see them. We didn't really talk about the game. I didn't want to be that guy. It's kind of, you know, bringing it up too much. So
too it
was, that was really good of you, to be fair. That was good of you.
Yeah, they're not bad people. So yeah, they didn't deserve to kind of have it rubbed in their face. But it was, like I say, it was nice to see them after.
You're led with Scotland by co-captains Finn Russell and Rory Darge. You're led at Saracens by Owen Farrell. So you're talking about two of the best fly halves in the world. Yeah. What are your thoughts on how they approach their roles?
That's a great question. I think I guess probably easier to compare Finn with Faz. They're both very different in terms of how they play, in terms of how they are as characters. I think Finn's obviously very laid back. He's obviously very kind of chilled and doesn't mind the chilled approach as long as kind of everyone's focused. Whereas Faz is probably a bit more hands-on, a bit more of kind of a drive it through his own intensity, which again, you know, that's how he does things. And I think both of them are brilliant. I think both of those guys, there's a lot of similarities in terms of how much they give to the game. They both spend a lot of time reviewing, previewing, looking over every aspect. So, you know, I'm very lucky to have or be surrounded by a lot of brilliant leaders.
Have you led? Have you been captaincy in your career? Or
yeah. I captained Saracens in like the Prem Cup a couple of years ago when I was a bit younger. I'm in the generals group at Saracens, so I've done a bit. It's not something that I think I kind of want to force. It's something that, you know, if you get given those responsibilities or it comes naturally to you, then do it. And I enjoyed doing it, but at the same time, I just enjoy playing. So. Yeah. However that best comes through, if I can lead just by playing, if I can lead by talking, then whatever comes naturally in that moment.
You came into the Guinness Six Nations on the back of, what was it, 3 man of the match performances?
Something like that.
Give or take. He's very humble. It was like, yeah, that's, like, it was in the first half of the season. That's a really impressive start. How are you enjoying your time at Saracens and then being able to transfer that experience down at the club up into your duties at country level?
Yeah, I think, you know, firstly, I try to be quite friendly to the pundits so that they're nice to me after the game. But I'm loving this season. Obviously, I've spoken quite a bit about injury trouble last season and the things I missed. So, you know, I just spent 7 months really looking forward to playing again. And I think that's translated in how I've played. I've played with a smile on my face. And yeah, I've loved it. I've loved every minute of the season so far.
Have you changed anything when you have a time off as well? Like you have to get the body right and the mind right, but any changes in your game in terms of looking to be, I don't know, get your hands on the ball more often or more turnovers or any changes?
Not really, because I looked at how I was as a player and it's more trying to do the things I do but to a higher level and a bit more often. It's quite a broad statement and easy to say, but I watched some of my games from last season especially, and I felt like I was in good form when I got injured. And so I felt almost like I had some unfinished business in terms of, you know, I didn't get to finish off last season, so I really wanted to pick up where I left off, and I feel as though I've been able to do that, which has been great.
Is there no positive way to look at being injured?
No, you know, it's very impressive.
Sometimes when you're injured, you kind of, you feel sorry for yourself.
And yeah.
And there will be times you do, of course, but like to have that kind of foresight when you're injured in order to see how can I make this a positive for and, you know, get the success and reward the next thing you need. It's quite a refreshing way to hear how we approach time out of the game.
Yeah, like I spent a lot of time talking to Callum Clark, who again I've spoken a lot about. He's my like mental skills coach, psychologist.
Did you play with Callum Clark?
I did.
Yeah.
He finished his career at Saris and was transitioning into that role.
And he was similar back row as well, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah. So he and I have got a brilliant relationship. Like, spoke to him this morning already. And I was saying to him, like, I feel through the injury, I was feeling as though I was becoming a better player. Just through kind of, I could feel the way my mind was sort of working, and I was watching games and analysing games and sort of seeing things and, again, reviewing my own games and seeing things I wasn't kind of looking out for before. So it just goes to show, in my opinion, like, how much mental skills can benefit you if you kind of get on top of them. And I feel as though, again, I've been good with that this year.
Do you think you could have learned that about yourself had you not had such a major setback with injury? I mean, that injury resulted in you not being able to go to France and represent Scotland at a Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
So
I think you learn it in a different way. Obviously, I had that time to reflect. So you know, I would have obviously preferred to have been fit and been able to go to the World Cup and do all those things. But, you know, ultimately I wanted to improve somehow. So that was kind of the only way I could do it.
Looking ahead as well, we've got a game in Italy and Rome coming up. You mentioned mental skills there. It's a big part of what you do in camp. You know, what you do personally, but big in terms of what you do as a squad here as well. And it seems to me it should be quite easy, really, in terms of being peaking and getting right up. But how hard is it to get that shared mindset across the group, and how hard do you work it in camp?
Yeah, I think we've done it unbelievably well so far this campaign. Aaron Walsh, who's on board as a mental skills coach here, has been phenomenal. I think the group's really aligned. I think it comes a lot from the leadership group of boys here, so they take charge of it really well as well. So we've got mental skills meeting this evening, and so, you know, tend to split into kind of three groups and come up with how, or review how we felt like we went about it. So for that England week, and then it'll be how we think we need to go about it this week. So it's brilliant to see kind of everyone getting on board with something again that I think a lot of environments don't really look into.
And what you focus on early in the week, that will be the kind of anchor, as you call it, and you'll refer to it all the way through the week, and you commit to it and then execute it at the weekend.
Yeah, because then in the game, like I said, it's an anchor, so it means that, you know, if Italy were to get loads of momentum, we can kind of get back to that. Or if we were playing brilliantly, but, you know, we think we start throwing the ball around too much or whatever, losing our heads, then we anchor ourselves back to that again.
Is that what happened in the opening section of the Calcutta Cup then, to some degree? You know, things might not necessarily go according to Scotland's game plan at that point. You anchor yourselves and you get back on and you move on. Because it looked like an effortless move. There was a real calmness.
Oh, absolutely. And like, look, it's rugby. Like, you can't control everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'd spoken about them having a blitz defence, which you could see in the first 10, 15 was on top of us. And it's one thing to talk about it and another thing to experience it. So I think the boys on the pitch dealt with it brilliantly. We had that first 10, 15 minutes. And then, like you said, there was a real calmness about how we got back to the task.
What do you do away from rugby?
Oh, well, this last week I did a lot of charity work, so that's quite a big feature in my life.
You're an ambassador for Show Racism.
I'm a patron for them. And so I did some work with them. I went to the Canadian High Commission and Parliament talking about anti-racism education. And then I worked with the Saracens Foundation on Tuesday evening, so the day before. Just played some football with some refugees, which was actually really fun.
Is charity work important to you?
It is very important to me, yeah. And it's something that I kind of want to keep growing and developing and kind of being a bit more hands-on with. So had the week off last week and thought I hadn't done anything for a while. So,
Do you mind me asking why that is? What makes you drawn to it?
I don't really know, to be honest. It's something that I can't really say that I've necessarily always been into it. I think over the last few years, the Show Racism and the Red Card opportunity popped up and I took it and started doing some events with them and stuff with them and loved it. And so the opportunity again came with the Saracens Foundation and wanted to do that too. So yeah, I don't know what's made me really get drawn to it, but I love doing it and it's so rewarding. And you know, I got home on Wednesday evening having done kind of three separate things and was like, what a week.
Brilliant.
How good it's been.
In the middle of Six Nations as well, like, it's, if there's ever a reason not to do something, it would be when you're so busy. When
an opportunity to have an excuse
to commit to that. Yeah. Mm. Anyways, you know, fantastic to do it.
Yeah, but it just gives you a break away. Yeah. Like, you know, these people are some of them living such tough lives, and you know, they look forward to a Tuesday evening playing some football, and you know, they don't care really about who I am or what I've done and the training I've done that day. So I don't care either. I just care.
What position do you play football?
It was like we had limited numbers. So I think I was probably a bit better conditioned than a lot of them. So I was running. I was blowing by the end of it. I was like, and they realised that I was probably quite fit. So they then ended up looking to me to kind of do all the running.
Carrying the team.
Yeah.
Somebody else said you're an Arsenal fan.
I am. I'm a big Arsenal fan.
Big Arsenal fan, yeah.
I do. I try to get to games when I can, but obviously they clash with our games quite a lot. So I've got a few friends who've got season tickets, so I tap them up sometimes. But
was football ever a consideration for you?
I mean, if I had the option, I'm not sure I'd be sat here, but I'm not sure I was ever good enough really to make it. So,
well, we're delighted. We're absolutely delighted, because in the nicest way, you're brilliant, superb with the oval shape.
I appreciate
that. That's worked out well. You are doing a bit of travelling up and down during, again, a Six Nations, of course, with commitments with club as well. we were talking very briefly there that travel, that commute can be quite enjoyable as well. Yeah. Are you somebody that likes listening to music? Are you a podcast guy? What's your...
I'm a bit of everything, to be honest. I started a new Netflix series yesterday for the journey. So I was watching Griselda, which is going quite well.
I haven't started it yet. That looks good.
Yeah. I've never heard of it.
I think the rating might be it's quite
for the older
quite
listeners.
Dark. But
I listen to a lot of music. I do listen to podcasts. Again, I listen to a lot of podcasts based around sort of the charity stuff I do. Mm. So a lot of it's around anti-racism and that kind of thing. So when I feel like I want to be educated, then I kind of turn to that.
There was another one. You the camp barber?
I've been cutting Scoomy's hair. he's probably the only one brave enough to trust me. Obviously, he saw his long locks over the last few years, so he doesn't really care about how he looks too much. So he's been letting me.
So he's either chop dummy.
Away. I've invested in some decent clippers now. So. Brought them in for this week, hopefully next 2 weeks. And you
build a client base?
Yeah, yeah. So
how did you discover that you can cut hair? That's a big goal.
It starts with telling people you can do it.
Back yourself.
And, yeah, you back yourself. And then, you know, I watched a lot of videos on kind of Instagram. Obviously, I've had a lot of haircuts in my life. And I just decided, you know what? I'm doing this.
The YouTube barber. Yeah. Oh.
Well, I've been cutting my younger brother's hair at home. So he'd moved in with me. And you know, just to save him some cash and help me learn the skills, it's been brilliant. It's quite fun to do.
Brilliant. Well, in the nicest way, you're welcome ever to go. Mostly, I might pass until you've
I could get you
watched a few more YouTube
can
videos.
Can you stick more on? That'd be my problem. Yeah, shortly.
Scooby's been asking for the same. He keeps asking why I'm fading him from the middle of the back.
The crown.
Yeah.
Andy, it's such a pleasure to catch up with you and to get a bit of an insight into who you are as well as on the field, but off the field too. We wish you all the very, very best.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's been brilliant.
Cheers.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
Great to catch up with Andy Christie there, and it was a big, massive game for him as well.
Yeah, it's been such hot form, hasn't it? It's all season been for Saracens, and so comfortable across the back row. But it's always in these big games, it's sometimes more difficult. We've spoken about this before. Coming into a game like that, you have to find your rhythm, you have to find the speed of the game, you have to get your second, your first win, never mind your second win, when everybody else is in the groove and the flow of the game. So it's a really difficult thing to come on and make. You know, such an impact as he did, and with the pressure and the expectation, but he's just so composed, and yeah, he's just playing so well. His physical attributes are exceptional in terms of his ball carrying and getting over the top of the ball, and just a really, really good back row player.
Slight sidestep here, but just when you bring that up, being a replacement and coming off the bench, that's also a skill too, isn't
it? Yeah, it's in some ways it's harder. Like, you know, in the build-up to the game, if you're starting, you know the start point. You're warming up, you're leaving the changing rooms, you're singing the anthems, you're starting. You never know at what point, if any point, you're going to be needed if you're on the bench. So you have to prepare as if the start point is right away. And then it might be. I mean, the first time I was ever on the bench for Scotland was a World Cup warm-up game in 2003. And I never made it to the bench. We kicked off and Kenny Logan got injured chasing the kickoff, so I hadn't even made it to the subs bench and I had to get on. So like it was literally 12 seconds. But other times you've been on and maybe came on later on in the game. And the one of the important roles you have as a replacement is you see the game from a totally different perspective to those in the game. So you maybe notice different bits and pieces. So you have to be ready to go on, but you also have to be quite analytical and try and, you know, if you do notice something, take it onto the field with you. But the start point being unknown is difficult. You're super excited. Your energy levels are wearing away as you're more and more nervous in anticipation. But you're also kind of half watching it as a spectator as well, getting the highs and the lows of scores for and against. So, yeah, mentally it's difficult, but, yeah. We've got to say the more you do it, the better you get. But you don't really want to be in the bench that often, do you?
No, you don't. That's not a skill that you really want to be adept at.
You want to be really bad at it, so you're no there again.
Before we look ahead to round four, we can't not mention very briefly round three, which for us, for Scotland, I mean, what a day that was, an occasion for the fans. And also, I mean, that game for Italy against France, as if it couldn't have got more interesting. But looking ahead, with those two games in mind, let's look ahead to round four then.
It just seems a long time ago, round three. and I think, because there's so much action, there's so much, you know, discussion and talk. I mean, the game against England for us was a vital victory, because we said that, even 1-1, lost one, going into that game, that crucial middle week where it determines, you know, can really determine where your last 2 week block takes you in the championship. But it's a Calcutta's Cup match on top of that, so that supersedes all that. I think, you know, we spoke about it before, I think Scotland will be frustrated at elements of the game.
Isn't it great to be able to say
it
that?
It is. I mean, I think that the good moments, there were some proper wow moments in attack and defence. I think sometimes the defence is overlooked. But there were some proper big turnovers and crucial moments. And in the tries, obviously, speak for themselves. But there'll be an element of frustration that it wasn't kind of as good as it could be for long enough periods, which I think is a great thing. It almost... You know, you have to look at it and say that we have to be better in order to win away from home in the next two rounds. It's simple as that.
How did that occasion compare for you? Because, you know, one of the things, that, you know, in my ear as I'm down at the touchline sort of doing the stadium announcing, it was, you're getting told louder because there are pockets of the stadium that won't be able to hear it, you know, and other folk will be getting deafened. But the sound that came out was just...
It was funny. The first half, and it probably mirrored the game, the first half had like exceptional atmosphere, and then it dropped off.
Mm.
And there was moments where I thought, actually, and that might have been, you know, partly due to the way England started, the, you know, the 10-0 lead, and the tries that we scored were like proper wow tries in the first half. So the noise is through the roof; it's exceptional. But then it found a lull again. The second half was completely different. The wall of noise, as it almost grew towards the end. It was just the atmosphere that, you know, that. Singing that started at the crucial times and the kind of connection on the field and off the field. It was so, I think everybody went away, and the headline, one of the headlines was the atmosphere and the occasion. It was phenomenal, it really was. But the first half, it was different, and it just shows you how important the supporters are to the players and the players are to the supporters. But yeah, that the end to that game, it was, you know, stuff where you're just kind of delighted and honoured to be in a sporting theatre like that. It's absolutely brilliant.
Stick with you for a long time. So then I guess on to Italy and looking ahead to that task. This is by no means an easy day at the office at all.
Yeah, no, I spoke about defence there, and I don't think Italy's defence was given enough credit in that first half against France. France could have been more organised, they could have been more clinical, but that was only half the story. The Italian defence on its own, well, within 10 metres of its own line for about 25 minutes and didn't concede. Against, you know, the brutality of the French attack in terms of just to sum the size, you got a couple of guys that were 145, 150 kilograms. And Italy just kept getting up and getting underneath the ball and stopping them and stopping crossing the line. And I think if France had held their depth on one or two occasions, they probably could have released a player, but they were probably rushed by the Italian defence as well.
That needs to be mentioned, isn't it?
I was actually watching it thinking that is incredible, but I actually thought, and probably I think the guys mentioned it at halftime on TV as well, you get, when you watch games like that and you play in games like that, the doubt in the back of your mind is this can't continue. The effort that's taken, and a defensive effort is, you know, more fatiguing really than an attacking effort, but it's like that is going to pay at some point. The number of tackles, the number of collisions, the number of multi-phase game, you know, plays that are right on your line. And then second half, Italy come out, and not only are they, you know, as strong, they're stronger. They finish the game stronger. They come back, they close the deficit, had the opportunity to score at the end and win it.
As a kicker?
Yeah, I don't see, like, I don't think there's a lot spoken and said about it. I'll be honest. I think if what's been said since, in terms of should have been reset, should have been moved forward, should have come, if you're thinking that in the 8 seconds between the ball falling off the tee and you having to kick it, like, everybody's in the moment looking at that. That's a retrospective way of looking at it. I'd be quite surprised. There might be some people that would have thought as rationally about it, you know, in the moment as they do when they're trying to make sense of it days and, you know, hours later. For me, I didn't think the French really encroached. I think the French moved forward when the ball fell off the tee out of what happens now. There's almost an inquisitive approach, then moved back the 10 metres. And yeah, like, I think from Garbisi's standpoint, he was really good afterwards. He says, it's my fault, I missed the kick, missed the opportunity. Desperately unlucky, it fell off the tee. People are wondering, how does it fall off the tee? You're inside, there's no wind. He does tilt his ball on quite an angle. And sometimes if there's dew in the ball or it's sweaty on that angle, it can slip in the tee. Even wee things like, you getting really deep technical info now, but you have new set of balls for every week and for every international. So through the week, you'll kick them in, you'll play them in, they'll be used, but 10 balls or whatever. Maybe the one that used hadn't been kicked in that much. And when you get new balls, they're a wee bit greasy, they're a wee bit, have a film on them. And it could be something like that, just in the dew and the, on the grass, and it slips off a tee. It's so unlucky. It's so unfortunate.
You just have to park it. I mean, like us with France, you have to just park it.
But honestly, it's like, how does the Six Nations throw this stuff up?
I mean, Netflix will be loving this.
Every week. And then it comes off the post.
Oh, but and it was within a post. Oh, my goodness.
And somebody's, I think it was like when he got it back on the tee, it was 8 seconds or 7 seconds to run back and try and kick it. And a unique set of circumstances.
But a massive step forward. The only
I suppose positive for Italy, or one of the positives for Italy, it wasn't a defeat. Mm-hmm. Like if that had been the outcome and you'd lost, at least it was a draw. Mm-hmm. When it, you know, the ball falling off the tee and then rushing forward and hitting the post, at least there was comfort in a draw. But they'll take confidence from that. The defence, they've got more probably players available this week than they did last week in terms of returning from fitness.
They won't be satisfied as well with the end result when they could have won it earlier in the game. No. And ultimately that...
And they're coming back home. Yeah. They're coming back home to a sold-out Stadio Olimpico. It's going to be another cracking occasion.
Well, they do say all roads lead to Rome, and indeed that will be the case. So that match taking place, of course, this weekend. You heading over?
No.
That's a first.
I know. We're hopefully going to try and enjoy it on TV.
Peace and is that quiet. In the pub or is that in the house?
No, that'll be
how
in the house.
How does Mossy?
Oh, I'll be on my own. I'll be on my own. TV. Keep it my way.
Quiet room, dark room on your own. Quite right. Well, we'll look forward to that game. And of course, you know, at this point, Scotland women are now very much back in camp and it's all eyes for them onto round one. So that's away to Wales, a huge, huge game for Brian Eason and Scotland women.
Yeah, and been in camp for spell last week and then this week as well as you look ahead to the kickoff against Wales, and there's extra pressure that comes with the success that the team have had, but there's a lot of familiarity, there's a lot more rugby having been played from a lot of the players that are being involved, and a lot more rugby of late being played from players who will likely become involved as if there's injuries and, you know, turnovers and change of to personnel. So there's a squad depth building that has had meaningful game minutes more so than before. And, you know, that brings with that a bit more, I suppose, management of fatigue management and injury management and all the kind of bits you have to get right in order to peak for the Six Nations. So I think they're in a good place. I think there'll be pressure and expectation on them, which is, I think, is a privilege, and it should be welcomed. It always seems to be Wales, doesn't it? There's always this edge that the first one's Wales, and I know they'll be looking forward to it.
Well, let's hear from the camp and let's chat with Scotland captain Rachel Malcolm and Emma Orr. Well, ladies, delighted to see you both at Hive Stadium. You are fresh, quite literally fresh from training. We just grabbed you on your way out. Rach, great to see you back as well. How was today's session?
Yeah, really good session today. We were in last week, but this week feels like a little bit of a step up. Obviously, first week is always a little bit of just getting back to grips with everything. And it's kind of perfect Edinburgh day with the sun shining. And yeah, it was a really good session.
Tell you what, isn't it? Is it?
I know. Can you see this al fresco more often if the sun's out? MR with us as well. I suppose just what Rach is saying, as you get closer to the start of Six Nations, obviously the intensity wraps up, but everybody in the squad's played a lot of rugby as well.
You're
probably
telling
more so than I, more so than season before. You're used to it, Rach, but Emma, you know, that do you feel that across the training sessions? A Celtic challenge, obviously, and everybody else playing down south and all over, there's been a lot of rugby under your belts.
100%. I think it's so valuable, like everyone playing for really strong club sides, whether that be in the Prem or for Celtic Challenge. So to have people come in, bring different styles of rugby, And ultimately, like, pushing the level at training is brilliant. So yeah, it's great to see.
Physically more demanding?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of sore bodies at the moment.
For you as well, coming in at this with five tries out of five games at one point with Edinburgh. I mean, what a busy old season you've had.
I know, I've absolutely loved it. I think to be playing for Edinburgh has just been a dream come true. So yeah, sad it's over, but happy it happened. And yeah, just been really good fun.
It must be interesting for you, Rachel, because you're seeing, like, I'll say this in the politest way, you are seasoned. you've seen a lot of evolution within the women's game, but seeing how Edinburgh's bedded in, Glasgow, obviously a slightly different season for them in the Celtic Challenge, and now coming back in a Scotland camp with, as you're saying, Emma, you've got a very different pre-season effectively building into your Scotland duties. What's your assessment of everything?
Yeah, I think it's been something that's probably needed to happen. I think, you know, in terms of Scotland, we've had a very kind of stable group probably for the best part of 6 years, and I think the Celtic Challenge has given an opportunity for more girls to put their hands up, but also more girls to probably learn, you know, the length of time that they were together as a squad and getting ridiculously high level coaching and playing at a good standard week in, week out has meant that they have probably accelerated towards their potential pretty quick. And I think, you know, the number of girls that we've now had pulled into the squad and even the girls that have been added in terms of just training numbers, they're all, you know, absolutely at the level that we need them to be to compete and put their hands up for spots as well. So I think for us to push on, we've always said we need to grow depth, and this has definitely been a brilliant step in the right direction for that.
I'd agree with all that. And also coming off the back of the WXV2 win, does that all that add more pressure? As you as a captain, as you as a leader, it's a different way of managing the squad with, let's be honest, some more expectation on the shoulders?
I don't think so, because we've always put that expectation on
from
our
within.
Own shoulders. Like, although, like, outsiders probably counted us out to some extent, we always believed in what we were capable of, and we always knew that was coming. And I think that was probably why we went out and did it in South Africa, because, and, you know, some of the younger girls talked about it at lunchtime today to the group, you know, probably one of the biggest reasons that we were able to go out and put in the performances in South Africa was that we do have that belief as a group, and we knew that was coming, and we knew that that hard work that we've put in for the last however many years was going to come to that. And I think now it's happened, it's almost like the monkey's off our back a little bit, so I actually feel less pressure.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think, like you were saying, the touching on the belief side of it, like, we knew we could do it, we just kind of had to get over the finish line there, and yeah, now we want to kick on and continue.
You didn't just get over the finish line, so you got 3 bonus point wins from 3 test matches, and you came back with silverware.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, this group's really special, and I think it's a, you know, the first trophy since 2001 that Scotland women have won, and I think this group deserves a historic moment like that. Not just because of the hard work that they've put in, but the people that we have within the group and the people that we have within the management team that have worked tirelessly for however many years to get us to the point that we're at now. So yeah, we're in a really cool place right now. It's a really exciting time to be a part of the squad. You know, I'm clinging on by my fingernails to stay on as long as I can, but there's, you know, younger people like Emma here who are coming through and pushing us as hard as we can to keep pushing on and have to be at our best to stay in the group as well. So that's what we need as well. But I think what is really cool about this group is that we want the best team out on, you know, against Wales in a couple of weeks' time. And whether that's got us in it or not, we'll always work as hard as we can within training to make sure that team's ready. So that's what I think has been a massive step forward for us as a squad.
And you're on the road to Wales, aren't you? To
we are away to Cardiff. Arms, yes. Park, Cardiff Park.
And is there a focus on that game?
That's the one. Sounds like a pub.
It's a pub, aye.
That'll be
afterwards.
Off to the pub in Cardiff.
Is there a focus on that game already, or is it more about bringing players together, you know, 2 weeks out? Have you looked at Wales yet?
I think the focus is very much on us as a squad and kind of building on the performances we made in WXV. So yeah, definitely just focusing on ourselves and then going there and hopefully doing the job.
I think one thing that's quite nice, and that it comes off the back of, like, the girls playing in the Celtic Challenge and us obviously playing a lot of us down south at high level, is the aims of what we have to get from camp are slightly different.
Yeah.
You know, before we had to kind of get everyone up to the
upskill
speed,
almost, and
upskill
spend time
and up
on
speed
task.
As well, in terms of, like, this intensity that we want to play at, because not everyone was playing at the same level, which probably you can probably vouch for that to some extent in terms of having played in the Scottish League.
100%.
And I think now that everyone within the squad has come from playing at a really high level of rugby, we can actually focus more on, you know, how we as Scotland want to play, the shapes we want to play.
The baseline is different. Yeah.
So, like, we don't necessarily have to flog ourselves and get into loads of conditioning games and stuff like that, because we're getting that at our club still. So it's meant that hopefully the starting point in terms of, you know, actually how we want to go and pull teams apart is what we're focusing on, which is cool.
On that issue of, I guess, the baseline that we're talking about, your own rugby journey, starting with you, Emma, coming up, I think it's the 18th of March, we've got Saltire Energy Rugby Schools Week, which is a massive opportunity to get kids across Scotland into rugby and via the schools, essentially. Your own journey, that started with your in your primary days, didn't it?
It did, yeah, back in Bigger. I think it's so, so good to see... like you say, this schools initiative and things like that, encouraging young kids to get involved in rugby, because ultimately, like, that's where it starts for a lot of people, and encouraging people to get into it then is brilliant for the sport. And yeah, basically I sort of started at Bigger Rugby Club at very wee, like primary four, I want to say, and then played for pretty much from Bigger up until a few years ago. But yeah, even at Bigger High School, there was a school of rugby as well. So things like that are just brilliant to have the opportunity for kids to get involved with that, which is great to see.
And the beauty of Hive Stadium is it's got that intimacy here as well, but the noise, as Mossy mentioned, the noise is just incredible. And then there's, of course, the addition of the season pass holders too.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's obviously the first year that we've had the opportunity to have our fans buy season passes. And I think to see, you know, such a big uptake in it in its first year is so, like, it gives us that little bit of energy to know that we have people that actually are super invested in our journey. You know, we want to make them proud, we want to make our fans proud, and we want to encourage as many more people as possible to come to our games, because it definitely does spur us on when we're here, and we absolutely love being at the Hive, so the more the merrier.
And those two games are France and England, Emma. Mm-hmm. Two teams that top the charts, really, in terms of women's rugby, especially WXV1 and Guinness Six Nations. It's a big old challenge, isn't it? But you get the sleeves rolled up for those two visitors.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's brilliant to have France and England to play at home, because ultimately they're the teams we want to compete against and we want to play against. So yeah, it should be a great spectacle, and we're excited to go out and give it our biggest shot.
And in the wider context then, I suppose in 2022, we of course had the introduction of the professional contracts. In 2023, we had the formation of Glasgow and Edinburgh Rugby. And then 2024, we're now on track for record crowds at Hive Stadium for the Guinness Women's Six Nations matches against France and then England. And then, of course, there's also now the opportunity to challenge for a Lions jersey. Have you had a chance to think about being a professional athlete at this point in the evolution of the women's game?
Yeah, to be honest, it's the dream job, isn't it? Yeah. Like, it's what, growing up, it's just what you want to do, and it's so grateful to be part of it in such a pivotal time in women's rugby at the moment. Like you're saying, the last kind of 3 years, it's just, like, even 5 years, it's just skyrocketed. So it's really exciting to be part of that and have those opportunities there, just like the men.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think, like, some of us that are a bit older are obviously, like, cursing that, you know, we probably won't get it and get. But I think us having been in it when, you know, we went through the tough times and, you know, we were all working full time and trying to do everything we can and all that kind of thing, like, that actually makes you appreciate this little bit, that bit more. And I think having been a part of a lot of the conversations and pushing for more and all these bits and bobs that have come as part of it has... it makes it, you know, all that more special. And I think, you know, for me, I want to push it as far as I can while I'm in it, so that, you know, for the young girls coming through and people like Emma, like, they have the best opportunities going forward, because, you know, we need to keep pushing our game and we need to keep pushing the opportunities and everything like that, so that we can compete with the best.
Do you feel that aware, are you aware of the impact that you've had? And you talk about the connections, Emma, you were looking up to the players that you're now playing with, and you've been very public in speaking about this. Oh, that's a positional thing. but that, especially to you, Rachel, do you take a moment to reflect on the impact that you've had on not only the women that are in the squad with you now, but the pathway that you've been carving through for the next generation too?
That's a big question, in the sense of, I think, you know, there's so many things which have contributed to it, and I think, you know, all of us within the squad can probably take some accountability for what that's happened, because none of this would have happened if we hadn't progressed in terms of our performances. You know, that was the starting point, was that Italy tournament, however many years ago it was now, but that was what kick-started the change. And then from then we've just pushed on tournament after tournament, and kind of it has been performance driven. So, you know, everyone within the squad's had a massive part to play, but also our management team as well. And I think, yeah, like we can look at what we've done as an individual and all that kind of thing, but I do think this group of people is so, so special, and like we would not be in this place that we're in now without them. But I think, you know, we're all pretty passionate about doing everything we can to keep pushing it forward. And, you know, we know we've got the support of our management team, which is always brilliant as well.
Don't forget about the here and now, Rach.
Yep.
Well, you're a wee bit retrospective there. But
that's me putting that on you, to be fair.
No, not at all.
You answered it well, but there's a big few weeks ahead. So
yeah, no, absolutely. I think for me, yeah, like I enjoy every single second of being in the squad and all as well.
Even training today.
that beautiful weather you spoke about, the sun's now away and all frozen, Caroline.
We've timed this perfectly well. Well, in that case then, let's round it off there and wish you all the very, very best for, first up, Wales in the Guinness Women's Six Nations. That's on the 23rd, of course, of March. Now, key one for the Scotland fans, those based here or travelling, get yourselves to Hyde Stadium on the 30th of March for a 2:15 kickoff against France, and then again on the 13th of April for the big one against England. Emma Orr, Rachel Malcolm, always such a pleasure to speak to you both, and very best wishes for the Guinness Six Nations.
Thank you very much.